They call him Gojira, you moron. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the only podcast in the world dedicated to the Chernobyl earthworm. When it comes to making films about world-ending terror, Hollywood calls only one man, Roland Emmerich. Over the course of his career, he's made films where humanity's faced extinction at the hands of aliens in Independence Day, solar storms in 2012, and a new ice age in The Day After Tomorrow. And next year he's going to try and kill us all off again by crashing the moon into the earth in the appropriately named Moonfall. But on this show we're going to be looking at the film he made where the population of the globe cowered in the face of a prehistoric sea monster, 1998's Godzilla. To help me review the film, I'm joined by a returning favourite, up from the depths, 30 stories high, breathing fire, his head is in the sky, it's Nick Rehack. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you so much for having me back, Will.
Now, for years, I've been stringing you along with the promise that you'll get to review a Godzilla film on the podcast. Well, that day has finally come, and I'm treating you to the chance to review what's commonly thought of as the worst film in the Godzilla franchise. So, you know, I think I really spoil you, Nick.
It was such a backhanded invite. The subject literally read, "It's time," and I'm like, "Here we go," and you're like, "This is what we're doing." I'm like, "Okay, we can do this," like wiping tears away and getting ready for it.
Well, you are a Godzilla fan, so you know, you were the first port of call when I came to putting together this show. So I guess I want to know, you know, what is your relationship with the Big G? You know, how did it begin? You know, what makes you a fan of this particular film character and film franchise?
It all goes back to my childhood. I don't remember how we came across it or how we had it, but we had a VHS box set in the house. And when you put the VHS tapes together across the five different ones, it created this image of Godzilla, and there was like planes flying through and an explosion. I was like, this is pretty neat looking. What's this? And I started watching it, and I just became enamored with this idea of like, look at this monster, like just attacking the city. And I would like throw it on in the background while I'm playing with Legos or whatever action figure toys. And then as I got older, I started really enjoying the non-monster parts, the part with like the people talking and what's the story and how does one relate to the other and is one a metaphor for the other and everything that came along with it. And I've just been a fan ever since. Like when Criterion announced the box set, I immediately bought it. Didn't even wait for it to go on sale. I was like, I will happily pay full price for this thing. And no regrets. Absolutely love it. The transfers are gorgeous. Just gorgeous. And like some of my favorites are on there. The newer films that have come out, it's been a while since I've cried in a theater, but Godzilla versus Kong pulled that out of me. Godzilla King of Monsters pulled that out of me. Like a lot of just that childhood nostalgia pulled it out of me. And it just feels good. It feels good to be a Godzilla fan again because they're doing it right. They're doing it well. Sure, it's not perfect, but it's fun. And it's even fun seeing some of the animes and some of the other avenues and TV series they've done with Godzilla. So all around, like, it's a pretty good time.
You even like the parts with people talking. Those were your exact words.
Yeah, that's and I don't know what age that happened, but that's when I'm like, oh, this is what it's like being an adult. Okay.
So what is it then that is it the appeal? Is it the kind of the buildings being destroyed, or is it the parts with people talking? I mean, what is it about these particular films? Because I mean, it's not as if Godzilla is the only kind of monster movie franchise that is out there.
I think it's the presentation. I think it's the idea of here's this guy, here's this character, here's this monster that nobody likes. But for some reason, they need him. And the way the theme hits as he makes his way on screen, the way he continues to fight whatever he feels is wrong and whatever he's like, I don't like this. I need to put an end to it. I need to – not just for himself, but it kind of saves others as well, even though that might not be his main goal. There's something about having that, I guess, strength to push through – stop what you think is wrong and keep going, even though other people are trying to stop you from doing it, be it, you know, military governments that you don't know what you're doing, so we're going to stop you. But to believe enough in yourself to be like, no, I got to stop this guy. And then there's no real accolade, right? he doesn't stand there looking for, to be lauded and looking for all the parades and whatever have you. He just does his thing and he goes. And in a way, it's like almost like a samurai to an extent, too. He kind of shows up, gets the job done, and leaves, or like a gunslinger, a bounty hunter. Just this misunderstood guy shows up, gets the job done, and he leaves. And I think that was always nice to see. In contrast to everything else as a kid, you're seeing these characters, hey, you did this thing, now it's time to, you know, be rewarded and have this excitement and everything. And yeah, that's nice and all, but sometimes just show up, do the work, and then go home. Like, you don't need, we don't need pomp and circumstance for everything. Like, I don't know, there's just some believability. There's like a realism to it, you know? I get it. He's a monster. It's a dude in a costume. He's running around doing his thing. But there's not this, like, excess pomp to it. It's like, we're going to get in, we're going to do this thing, and we're going to go.
Well, my introduction to Godzilla came when I was a kid as well, and it was by watching the Hanna-Barbera Godzilla cartoon. I don't know if you've ever come across that.
I've seen a couple episodes, yeah.
And your thoughts on Godzuki?
I'm not a big fan, and by big fan, I mean
he's the Scrappy-Doo, isn't he? The Scrappy-Doo of...
He really is. He really is. There's no need for him. Like, at all. Anytime he shows up, I'm like, why are we doing this? Same thing. And you always knew it was a Scrappy episode because the theme was changed just a little bit to make sure we talked about him. And that's how they kind of told us, like, look, we're letting you know, like, you don't want it. Like, here it is. And we're like, great, fine.
Now, there are currently 32, if I've got my maths correct, official Godzilla films in existence. And as you're a big fan, I thought it'd be fun to get you to rank all the movies in the series from best to worst. So, Nick, give me your Godzilla franchise ranking.
All right, here we go. Number one, Godzilla, the original from 1954. Number two, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, the one from 1956, the follow-up sequel, if you will. Number three, Godzilla versus Biollante. It's the 89 film. A bit of a controversial one. That one was only ever released in Japan, never had an American release. Number four, The Terror of Mega-Godzilla out of 75. Number five, Godzilla versus Mothra. Big fan favorite, 1964. For number six, I'd have to go with... And, of course, that leaves us number 32, the final one. No question, no surprise. It's 1969's All Monsters Attack.
Well, thanks a lot, Nick. And some very interesting selections there in different. I think, I think people are going to be discussing your 17th Godzilla film. That ranking there, very controversial. But I think
I don't blame them.
We're going to get a big reaction, I think, on social media when that comes out. But I think we've ranked enough Godzilla. I think it's time that we got stuck into this 1998 version that we are here to review. So I will be inserting the trailer clip here. In the wake of extensive nuclear testing in the South Pacific Ocean, a scientist called Nick Tatopoulos, I don't know why I did the American accent there, is summoned by the US Army to shed light on the ominous sighting of a gargantuan sea dragon. Before long, a mutated, scaly nightmare in the shape of Godzilla threatens to level a rain-soaked New York City. With political efforts crippled by bureaucracy and military efforts proving futile, it falls to Nick and a mysterious insurance agent and two intrepid journalists to put an end to Godzilla's reign of terror. In the cast, we have Matthew Broderick, Jean Reno, and a curious number of actors associated with voice work on The Simpsons. The film was released to widespread critical derision, where it was hailed as one of the most idiotic blockbusters of all time. Dean Devlin, who co-wrote the script, has since admitted to bungling the story. Despite all these problems, the film was the biggest film of the year on its release, earning around $380 million worldwide at the box office, and the same again in merchandising revenue. The film has a 5.4 user rating on IMDb and a 2.1 out of 5 user rating on Letterboxd. So with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of Godzilla?
I'm not really a fan. It's a fun movie all around, but as a Godzilla movie, it's not great. For me, I mean, you heard my ranking earlier. I bring it at number 31. Like, it is downright awful. I remember as a kid really enjoying it, and I think that's because what I had seen was all the VHS tapes and, you know, the kaijus and people dressed up and everything. And now it's like, okay, now we're in America this time doing it. Now he's attacking New York City. A little bit of familiarity there. And there's a different, like, meaner take on him, and we'll see how that looks. And as a kid, absolutely enjoyed it. But as I revisit it as an adult, as I watched it last night, not great. Not great at all. The soundtrack, maybe just as bad, if not worse, but I'm not a fan for a variety of reasons. It's not just to hate on it because it's easy to hate on it. No, there's a variety of reasons.
Okay, well, what is sticking under your craw with this particular iteration of the character?
Well, the biggest one to me, and this is probably a good chunk of the conversation, I think, is it's not a Godzilla movie. Roland Emmerich only makes natural disaster films. It's just what that disaster is changes every time. He's got the moon coming for us, right? But Godzilla, this Godzilla doesn't have a purpose. In every Godzilla film, he shows up for one reason or another. Mm. And the one reason is to fight another monster that has come through. Godzilla is the apex predator. He is number one. There is nothing that can stand in his way. Here he comes. And the other one is when it's more of a metaphorical destruction of thing. You know, man exceeding his limits and more of a metaphorical type thing. But this, Godzilla shows up because he's hungry for fish. He shows up for, I don't know, the first time ever in New York City out of nowhere within a who knows span of time, because we are not really keeping track of the timeline here, has laid over 200 eggs in Madison Square Garden. And if we're to believe that Godzilla is 70 meters tall in this film, how is he able to get in and out of Madison Square Garden? There's a lot of things that don't make sense to the name of the Godzilla character, and in my mind, that's the only reason. The reason is because this is just a natural disaster film, and rather than a hurricane or a blizzard or a comet or the moon, it just happens to be this, you know, mutant lizard. And you can't just go making a mutant lizard film because everybody's going to immediately compare it to Godzilla. Even if you did another animal, you're still going to get a comparison either to Godzilla or to King Kong. Like, you're kind of just pigeonholed.
Well, have you heard people refer to this movie as Geno? Because I think this is a sort of a sobriquet that's been given to it, in that it is Godzilla in name only.
I have heard of that. I try to avoid that only because Geno, at least over in the States, reminds me of Rhino, like Republican in name only, and I don't want to get like politics mixed in with my Godzilla films. I like to keep the two very separate. But I have heard that before. I tend to, not being rude, I just tend to ignore this film altogether. It's fun for what it is. It is a fun, goofy movie at times, campy, but it's not a Godzilla movie.
Mm. Well, the point that you made there about what is the purpose of Godzilla in this film, that's definitely something I picked up, because, you know, I'm no expert on the franchise, but I've seen a fair chunk of this series from different eras. And yeah, I mean, most Godzilla's films, the big G falls into one of two things. He's either out to destroy us or he's our savior. And in this film, it's not really clear what we're sort of meant to think of him. And the film seems to have quite a sort of ambivalent view towards him. And he's laying all these eggs, and it's unclear whether, as a viewer, we should be, happy, for Godzilla in this moment, you know, he's going to have some kids, or whether we should be terrified that all of these monsters are going to be, you know, running around across the globe. And I think you see this sort of like ambivalence again and again throughout the film. And with Godzilla sort of stomping around New York, it's not, you know, he's smashing up all these buildings, he's stepping on vehicles, but the film sort of hedges as to whether Godzilla is actually killing people in those particular moments, because you don't see anybody die in those particular moments. Like, the film has set up the fact that Manhattan's been evacuated, so there won't necessarily be people in these buildings that he's stomping through. So did anyone die in there or not? And it seems like, the film's sort of like hedging as to it wants all this destruction, but it doesn't want us to actually think of as Godzilla as a murderer. And then you get very strange, like, emotional beats within the film as well, where the film sort of tries to imply that Godzilla's been killed by these some missiles that have been fired from a submarine, and we see this sort of sad, we get this sad music as Godzilla floats in slow motion to the bottom of the seabed, and you know, we're kind of like, oh, I didn't realize I was meant to feel sad for Godzilla in this moment. And just and I think this issue, I mean, it is one that has actually been, I was reading some stuff by Dean Devlin, who co-wrote the script, and he has acknowledged that, yeah, we didn't kind of, you know, we didn't get off the fence about, you know, whether Godzilla, you know, it was a deliberate choice to be sort of a bit on the fence as to whether Godzilla was destroyer or savior. And I think unfortunately the film falls between two stools. I mean, he's acknowledged that that was an error on their part. And you know, I wondered, you know, as I was watching this, it felt to me a bit like the shadow of Jurassic Park was kind of lingering over this film. I don't know if you got a similar sense.
Well, I think it always will. Godzilla was kind of out of the public eye for a little bit, and all of a sudden you have Jurassic Park coming through, and now, like, that's the big thing. Like, those are the big dinosaurs everybody wants to talk about. There's a renewed interest, assumedly, in, you know, archaeology, paleontology, dinosaurs, and everything like that. People are reading about them, learning about them. And if you try to bring Godzilla back, who looks more like a traditional dinosaur than he does like a kind of lizard in this film, even though they try to make it not look like it. Well, he does. Like, and if you look at it, if you look at this Godzilla versus all the other Godzillas, zero, I mean, maybe the spikes on his back. That's the only resemblance we get to all these other Godzillas. It's absolutely absurd. But I don't know why they wouldn't just pick something and stick with it. If you're going to make him a villain, make him a villain. If you want to make him a complex hero, then make him a villain in front, but then slowly show, like, oh, he's actually doing it for this reason or that reason. Because by the time we find out, oh, it's going to have kids everywhere, like you said, it's like, well, do we feel sorry for him? Do we feel happy that, you know, what's the concern here? What are we worried about? And even at the end, when they finally, like, take him out, and you got Matthew Broderick looking over at him, and the kind of eye, the light leaves his eyes, and his lens closes up, which is very aggressive for a movie like this. The when we see that happen, it's like, so I'm supposed to feel sorry now? It's almost like he has a regret, but then immediately shakes it off. Like, there's no exploration of that idea. It's all very surface level, even if they try to make it seem like they want to push it a step or two deeper.
Well, I think there are some other elements in the way I think Jurassic Park sort of hangs over this film, or its influence can be seen in it, and which is when all of these, like, baby Godzillas hatch out, and we have this sequence that's set inside Madison Square Gardens, where the kind of the mini Godzillas are running around, and the heroes are trying to get away, and they're spilling basketballs in order to kind of, like, upset the way that these kind of, you know, mini Godzillas are running around. And it's very much like the raptor scenes that we got in Jurassic Park. And again, you know, that it kind of adds in with that thing with the basketballs. It kind of adds in an element of comedy to a scene which should be some level of scary. And I feel like this the film is always it never really settles, I think, on a tone, you know. And I think that's amplified again by the fact we've got so many actors in this film who are essentially comedians. I mean, we've got you know, Matthew Broderick, aka Ferris Bueller, in the lead role of this, and you know, got people like Kevin Dunn and Michael Lerner, you know, these kind of like Harry Shearer from you know, from The Simpsons, and I think it just kind of contributes to this slight confusion between sort of dramatic and comedic beats that goes on repeatedly within the film.
Yeah, absolutely, and you make a great point with the Jurassic Park raptor scene. What makes that so effective is we're scared. Like, this has gone from a big dramatic epic of like, wow, look at this, look how astounding this is, to, oh no, we're trapped, we're gonna die, we have to survive now. The whole time with this Godzilla film, there's never a point where you feel like we're gonna lose. Even when they're in Madison Square Garden and they make a point to say, hey, they're in here, immediately the military is coming and you're blasting them away. We're only concerned about these couple of people that are in here and them getting out, which who cares? There's no connection there. There's no, you know, worry. It's just, okay, let's hope they can get the dinosaurs and kill them all. But even then, is that what we want? We should. But then I'm sure there's some people that are like, oh, well, you know, they're just babies. They're not going to hurt anything. And it's when you do, like you said, have the basketballs or the gumballs, and they're or when he's going up the elevator and he opens up the one door and a bunch of them are just slinging around in some popcorn, all of a sudden it plays down the threat. All of a sudden it's like, oh, these are who cares if they get out there? They don't know what they're doing. They're just hokey. It's whatever. Yeah, we've seen them attack a couple people, but you can't keep going back and forth between this person was killed.
It kind of reminded me of Gremlins. Which very much is, it's a comedy, but also with scary bits, and you know the tone that it's aiming for, and that works. Whereas here, it's like, I'm confused. Am I meant to be scared? Am I meant to be laughing? Am I meant to be doing both? I don't know, and I don't think the filmmakers know either.
No, and they're too busy making these weird tongue-in-cheek jokes about like Ebert and Roper. Or excuse me, Ebert and Siskel, whoever went to us together at the time, those two, and kind of nods and winks to everything else, that they're not really looking at what's really happening in front of our faces. Like, you could take out the whole aspect of the mayor and the governor and them in town. You can just have it just, hey, the military, we need to figure out how to end this problem, et cetera, et cetera. But instead, you just kind of pop in and out and you lose the tone. There's no consistency there. And I think that's one of the major faults of the film. And you're right. It baffles the mind, and then you don't know how to feel. Is it, like you said, is it fun with scary bits? Is it scary with fun bits? Or is it just this big campy action romp now? You know, which one is it? Stick to it, play it through. I don't care how you play it, but believe in it and keep it consistent.
Well, let's talk about Godzilla himself in this film. You know, what did you think of him here? Because you know, his appearance was quite controversial amongst Godzilla fans, because they basically moved away from the sort of traditional presentation of Godzilla here. You know, Roland Emmerich, with the kind of designers of this film, came up with their own unique design of Godzilla here. So rather than being like a bipedal creature that walks around on two legs, he is very much a creature of four legs, very much a different sort of physical design. How much did the kind of differences that they had made to the presentation of Godzilla, how much did that, you know, how much did you like it? Did you dislike it?
I didn't like it. And as I've gotten older, I like it less and less. I can appreciate what they were trying to do with it. If you look at like underneath of his neck as it connects to his body, I guess like the jowls or whatever, it's very lizard-like. You know, there's some aspects where they're like, okay, they're kind of taking bits from a crocodile, an alligator. They're kind of making this like reptile amalgamation on steroids and nuclear power. And I can get it. But at the end product, when you look at it, especially when it's on the suspension bridge and you get a full shot of it, it doesn't look like a traditional what Godzilla should be. It looks more like a xenomorph. It looks more like they want to do their own thing. That's fine. But if you're going to do that, you might as well call it something else. You still have the spikes on the back. Okay, cool. What else do you have? You barely have the roar. And when you do, you muffle it out with other sound effects. There's no atomic breath. There's nothing that makes it Godzilla. It's now a different thing altogether. I don't mind if you make tweaks or adjustments here and there. They've been doing it since the 50s. You know what I mean? When you go from into the different eras, the Showa era, the Heisei era, Millennium era, all these different parts, they make these adjustments, but they make them make sense within the character. They all at least stick to like 80%, and then they just add little bits and pieces to it, something of a natural progression or evolution, if you will. But this, it's just like a random offshoot, and it doesn't work for me. It doesn't, even as a kid, I'm like, this doesn't look right. Like, what's wrong with his face? But it just it really does just look more and more like an amalgamation every time I look at it.
Well, you mentioned that we don't get the traditional Godzilla roar in this film, and we also don't get the traditional Godzilla theme. That's absent. Yeah. Here. You know, we do get he does get his own kind of theme music in this film. I actually thought that was, you know, quite well done. But, you know, how, what did you, are you more of a traditionalist? Were you irked by the absence of, you know, the traditional theme?
I'm a traditionalist in a sense that I got to hear the theme at least once. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if they happen to be like flipping through the radio and it comes on, or they're seeing an opera and for some reason it's playing and they change it. I got to have it in some shape and form.
Okay, I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
A cop.
Want to do the honors? Pleasure.
Stop something, please!
His lover.
Some women find danger exciting.
His partner.
You're a lot better at this kind of thing than me.
I know.
A murder.
A woman was killed, and Jack's been getting death threats.
Someone he knows.
Look at that. Sealed with a kiss.
Is killing everyone he knows.
Whoever killed Kimberly Davis killed Morgan, too.
Which one is the killer?
These are the clothes they got killed in.
I swear to God, I don't know how they got here.
Don't underestimate me.
Who is the next victim?
After you'd seen me?
I could have blown your brains out.
When a murder case is this shocking.
Any fingerprints?
Mm-hmm. Where isn't Jack?
You can't trust the evidence.
Don't start asking me about my experiences. You could become one of them.
You can't trust your partner.
I wanted to corrupt you.
You just put your marriage into jeopardy, and maybe even your life.
And you can't even trust yourself.
You know I really wanted you to stop.
Jack!
Traces of Red.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs after Godzilla arrives in New York, with the Big G chewing up the Big Apple, the military brought in to save the day. Some helicopters pick up Godzilla's trail, but despite being a massive skyscraper-sized mutant lizard, Godzilla manages to elude the pursuing choppers. They think they've got him cornered, but he suddenly comes crashing through a building behind the hovering helicopters. Godzilla lashes out and sends one chopper crashing into a building before chomping his jaws around another one like a tasty rotor-bladed snack. The remaining chopper tries to flee. The pilot radios in saying he's shaken off the beast, only somehow Godzilla has got underneath the helicopter, allowing him to rear up and gobble up the third chopper. Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
It was, some moments for me were absurd, and other moments were like really fun and enjoyable from an exploding helicopter perspective. Him exploding through a building and getting a helicopter is one of the goofiest things I've ever seen. But I will say that concept is really cool. He jumps out, smacks the hell out of one, great explosion out of it. Then he kind of jumps up and chomps at a second one, which less of an explosion, which kind of bummed me out. Mm. I wanted a bit more of an explosion on that second one, but it just kind of fizzles out, right? It hits a building, big and massive, beautiful. We even get a reflection on the glass, but then he goes to bite that second one, and it's just the way the helicopter flies at the screen. I'm wondering if they kind of like saved a couple bucks by putting that in direction of where the fireball would be, or even, hey, the fire's behind it as the piece flies towards you. But the second one was like rather disappointing. Then, of course, we have like the really intense third chase, and then, you know, he comes jawsing up and gets somebody, which Godzilla wouldn't do that. I don't want to be that guy and be like a real one. He wouldn't do that. But again, there's no real like planning. Godzilla would just like see something and attack. He wouldn't have the forethought to go, I'm going to hide around the corner and then jump up and get him. Is it a cool shot? Yeah, absolutely. It's a cool looking shot. I like how even the propeller and the rotor comes flying up like that. I think it's really cool and well done. But, you know, again, it's kind of hokey.
Yeah. Did you detect a Star Wars influence on this particular sequence? Because we see these Apache helicopters chasing Godzilla among the skyscrapers of New York, and the pilots are mostly using these little screens they've got inside their cockpits to navigate by, and the graphics on them were very much really reminded me of the trench run in Star Wars, and locking on that whatever it was, that kind of exhaust port.
Yeah, the graphics did when it hit my. I saw the little cockpit display, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like, that's totally just like Star Wars. And it's just now dawning on me now. I'm like, oh yeah, well if he's flying around the buildings in a very labyrinth-like way, that could also be much like the Death Star trench run. And what's even funnier is we're watching this, and Bethany's like, why doesn't he just fly up above the buildings?
Well, that is one of the things I was going to point out, which is a real regular bugbear of mine with exploding helicopter sequences, is the fact that so frequently pilots fail to fly at safe range from perfectly observable threats. So I don't know why these helicopters, they're worried where Godzilla is. Why don't they just fly to a higher altitude where they can't get into any trouble? I mean, it's something that we see time and time again in movies. You know, if you've seen Kong Skull Island there, where the big monkey goes berserk on a whole fleet of Huey helicopters, none of these pilots, these military pilots, none of them just think, you know what, I'm just going to take this helicopter up to about 1,000 feet and I'll be safely out of range, and we could just empty our machine guns into this beast and there'd be absolutely nothing you can do about it. But no,
yeah,
you know, they just stay within swatting range at all times.
No, and then like when they're shooting into the hole that they thought he was in there, assuming they're just sitting there. It's like, you don't think like, hey, I don't see any movement, let's go out of the way and take a step back. It's like, let's just get our faces right up to this door and see if someone's going to open it or not.
Now, I had a little quiz question for you, Nick. How many films has Godzilla starred in where a helicopter has exploded?
Ooh, I don't know, and I should have looked this up before getting on this podcast, because in my mind I'm like, he's gonna ask. I'm like, but maybe we'll just be so bogged down that he won't. If I had to guess, just a total guess, I'm gonna say 14.
Well, you've gone a little large there. You've gone a little large. It's actually 9 films that
really?
he's starred in. So yes, I won't list them all. You can head over to the Exploding Helicopter website, and you can have a look there, and you can see all the films that he starred in with an exploding helicopter. But if Godzilla was an actual actor, that would make him the joint. He would be joint second in terms of the number of films that he's been in with an exploding helicopter. He's equal with Arnold Schwarzenegger for appearances in films with an exploding helicopter.
Not bad. That's not bad at all. That's really, I'm impressed.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, do you want to tell people what you've got going on at the moment and where they can find you online?
Absolutely. Over on Mixcloud.com, I've got my show Rehack Radio, new episodes every Tuesday. And recently, I joined Chris and John on the Popcorn Auteur podcast, and we talked about my favorite living director, Paul Thomas Anderson.
A director who has yet to make a film featuring an exploding helicopter, Nick.
Yet. I haven't seen Licorice Pizza yet, but maybe there's one in there.
I think what I'm saying is, you know, you should maybe relegate him from the position of your favorite director until such time as he corrects the glaring oversight in his filmography.
I might have to do that.
You think about that. As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website, explodinghelicopter.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or Letterboxd. We'll be back soon, but until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters. We'll be right back.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Non, monsieur.
Oh, you call this coffee?
I call this America.